This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
Hey, warmer from the low. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. We've got an excellent podcast for you. Joining me in segment number two, we are going to have on one of our good friends, and Rob Donaldson. He does such a great job taking a look at this amazing game of baseball. We're going to be chatting with him about just how he's deciphering the Saturday card, things that have been standing out to him towards the beginning part of the season. We'll also talk about how weather affects his handicap on some of these games, especially the totals as well, some of the player props that he plays. So we're going to be having a great time with him. And segment number two, in the final segment, I'm going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Saturday as we touch them all. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, for this podcast, you have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter / X timeline at @unit_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, naming does not matter. So as per usual, please just send these into the timeline. Other ways, find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciating them from there. You're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not get in any Twitter / X questions today, but we had an amazing day of baseball on Friday. Let's take a look back at it. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
It was a game of Leaster between the St. Louis Cardinals and the Milwaukee Brewers, and Brewers have been one of your top over teams all season long. This was very much an under, though, as the Brewers now 12 overs to 6 unders. Meanwhile, the Cardinals 6 overs, 12 unders, and 2 pushes. So, two opposite teams, 2-1 the final in this one. As for the Brewers, Freddy Peralta was dealing 6 scoreless innings from there. Elvis Piguero, a scoreless inning. But, yeah, Trevor McGill tried to get a 2-inning save. He allows that run in the 9th inning, which means Joe Piamps has to get an out of the bullpen. And then Hobie Milner, a scoreless 10th inning. As for the Brewers, they go just 2 of 11 with men in scoring position as Kyle Gibson had it going on. 4 walks, but allows just 1 run in 6 innings. From there, Giovanni Gallegos, pair of outs out of the bullpen. Matthew Liberatore, scoreless inning. Ryan Fernandez, 1 3rd inning scoreless. But Ryan Helsley gives up an unearned run, the 10th, as the ghost runner was able to come through via William Contreras and his game-winning single. So a good night for the Brewers, who may not find themselves at top of the NL Central at 12-6, but the Cubs are giving them chase. The Chicago Cubs take down the Miami Marlins by a count of 8-3. As for the Miami Marlins, this has been a miserable and sad start to the season for them, as they are 6-14 on the run line. That is the worst mark in all of baseball. And for Miami, AJ Puck, well, he probably should get the puck off the mound as a starter. See what I did there. 7 runs surrendered in 3 innings, 3 walks along the way. Why they continue to give him starts, I have no idea. From there, the bullpen was honestly fine. Bert Schmidt, 2 scoreless innings. Andrew Nardi, a scoreless inning. Declan Cronin, 2 innings, he allows a run. And for the Miami Marlins, they did have Brian De La Cruz get a home run off of James Taillon. 4th home run season for Taillon. Gives up a 1 run over the course of 5 innings. And he won with the under. Colton Brewer toasted this one. 2 runs, one of which was earned, surrendered in his 2 innings of work. But Keegan Thompson in long relief, relatively solid as well. 2 scoreless innings out of him. for the Cincinnati Reds. They were on to getting a win by a count of 7-1. By the way, Cubs are now 14-5 on the run line this year, both as a favorite, as an underdog. That is the best mark in all of baseball. But for the Reds, they're now 10-9, above 500 as they get to the bullpen. As Tyler Anderson, good start here. Two runs, one of which was earned, given up in seven innings. Officially took the loss, but not on him. He gives up home run to Tyler Stevenson, second home run season. But then Ellie De La Cruz, three-run bomb off of Ozzy Cicerno, sixth home run season for Cicerno. He gives up that home run. He inherited men on base, so he only gives up one run in two-thirds of an inning. Adam Simber stuck with giving up four runs in a third of an inning. And for the LA Angels, nothing doing as Nick Lodolo kept it on the low-low. Six strikeouts, six and a third innings, so lost just one run. Did give up seven hits along the way, but Fernando Cruz, pair of outs out of the bullpen, Lucas Sims, Buck Farmer, they're both able to supply a scoreless inning. 17-1, the Arizona Diamondbacks completely toppled the San Francisco Giants. Blake Snell right now in awful form. Five runs surrendered in four and two-thirds innings, so lost nine hits. Clearly not getting into camp was expected to be an issue, and it's been an even bigger issue than expected, but the guys out of the bullpen did even worse. Landon Ropp, he gives up four runs, three of which were earned in one and two-thirds innings. Kaiwai Tang, he comes in for an inning and he allows five runs. Nick Avila, he gives up a run in two-thirds of an inning. And then you had to have Mr. Fitzgerald, Tyler Fitzgerald, the backup shortstop, come in for an inning. He gave up two runs as for the San Francisco Giants. They tied the Arizona Diamondbacks in amount of home runs in this game. One was Jorge Soler. He was able to go deep for his fourth home run season. That off of Jordan Montgomery, who he looks like a man that's very much in mid-season form. Gave up just one run in six innings, that solo home run. Scott McGough, Justin Martinez combined for three scoreless innings, and then did have Blaze Alexander go deep for his third home run season. As for the Arizona Diamondbacks, they go 10 of 23 with Ben in scoring position. Yeah, the New York Mets topple the LA Dodgers. This by kind of 9-4 as for the Metropolitans. They had Chamanea give a relatively okay start here. Two runs surrendered over the course of five innings against this lineup that's solid. Reed Garrett does come in and allows two runs, both of which were unearned runs. Omar Narvaez had catcher interference, and Joey Wendell had a pair of errors out there in the field, so defense was not helping. But Adam Ottavino, Brooks Raley, they were two scoreless innings, and Jake Diekman, scoreless inning of his own. As for the Mets, they get a pair of home runs. DJ turned it up, Stewart off of Yomanashi Yamamoto. He gets his third home run campaign, and for Francisco Lindor, he gets his second home run of the campaign as Yoshinobu Yamamoto. He gives up four runs, three of which were earned over the course of six innings. I think I said his name incorrectly the first time, so I apologize to Mr. Yamamoto. Meanwhile, you had Mr. Danny Hudson come in. He gives up two runs, one of which was earned, including one of those bombs. Joe Kelly gives up two runs in an inning. Ryan Brazier gives up a run in an inning. And for the LA Dodgers, 3 of 12 with men in scoring position. So a glorious win for the Mets, who are now 9-2 in their last 11 games. And for the Blue Jays, offense has not been great this year, but they have found a way to be able to pick up wins. 5-1, they're able to take down the Slam Diego Padres, as it has been very much an under season thus far for the Toronto Blue Jays, as they played 11 unders to just 9 overs. And for Toronto, you had a pretty solid start here from Yariel Rodriguez. He gives up one run over the course of four innings. He did allow a home run to Fernando Tatis Jr., sixth home run of the campaign, but everyone at his back, as you had Bowden Francis give up nothing in his two innings of work. Jordan Romano, Yimi Garcia, Tim Meza all supply a scoreless inning, and Justin Turner down for what? Gets a second home run season. That off of Matt Waldron, who had himself a rough night. Five runs surrendered in four and two-thirds innings. Bullpen from there saved you on the under. Logan Gillespie, Adrian Mudahone, they combined for two scoreless innings. Stephen Kulik, pair of outs out of the bullpen, and Dom Cosgrove, one and two-thirds innings, scoreless out of him as well. We did not see anything in Rockies versus Mariners because that game got snowed out. I did not misspeak. It literally snowed out there, so that's not great. What else was not great? Our DK Now are great. A pick went into the abyss because you saw the Cleveland Guardians put up a 10 spot. 10-2, they take down the Oakland A's as Tyler Freeman hit a home run that would have only been a home run in Cleveland. That's when you know that things are not going well for you, as Joe Boyle gives up seven runs on five hits over the course of six innings, giving up that home run to Mr. Freeman, his third home run of the campaign, and then Josh Naylor goes deep off of Kyle Mueller. His fifth home run in the campaign for Mueller. Gives up three runs, one of which was earned over the course of two innings, hurt by an error out there in the field. And for the Oakland A's, they did get a pair of home runs of their own. That's the only way that they got runs. Brent Rooker, solo home run off Scott Brawley, third home run in the campaign. And Tristan McKenzie, He gives one up to Abraham Toro, second home run of the campaign, as for McKenzie gives out that solo home run over the course of five innings. Barlow, solo home run in his inning of work. Tim Herron, scoreless inning, and Tyler Beattie, two scoreless innings. So Guardians do stay very, very hot, and Cleveland has actually been a little bit of an over team as far this season, as they play 12 overs, 7 unders, and a push. Your top over team in all baseball, though, that would be the Baltimore Orioles. 12 overs, 5 unders, and 2 pushes. They fall to the Kansas City Royals, though, on Friday by a count of 9-4. For Dean Kramer, he gives up 3 runs over the course of 5 2/3 innings, including a home run. Not a great start, not a terrible start, as taking him deep, you had home run number 4 of the campaign for Vinny Pascantino, and then don't take gives one up to MJ Melendez, also his 4th home run of the campaign. For Dade, he gives up 3 runs, but this over the course of 1 inning, and Keegan Aiken, he got 1 out of the bullpen. He allowed 3 runs before Mike Bauman. He comes in for a scoreless inning, and you did see Adley Rutschman go deep for his 2nd home run of the campaign, that of the Grand Slam variety, as that comes off of Will Smith, who certainly got jiggy with it, gave up all 4 runs in this game over the course of his inning of work, as Alec Marsh was rock solid, 5 2/3 innings scoreless, John Schreiber not out of the bullpen, and then you had Nick Anderson supply a scoreless inning, and same for Matt Sauer, so they did not sour on a win there. The Atlanta Braves, they stay hot with their bats as well. 8-3, they're able to take down the Walker Texas Rangers. Braves, by the way, 11 overs, 6 unders, and a push for them thus far this season. As for Texas, Andrew Heaney, not the world's worst start. 3 runs surrendered in 5 innings. Did allow a pair of home runs going deep for Atlanta. Travis d'Arnaud, not once, not twice, but 3 times for his first 3 home runs of the season, 2 of which came off of Heaney. And then Jordan Latz gives up the other one, and Michael Harris was able to take Austin Pruitt deep. That is home run number 3 of the campaign for him. Pruitt gives up that home run in his inning work. Latz gives up the home run, 4 runs in total in 2/3 of an inning. And you did get 4 outs out of the bullpen squirrels out of Cole Wynn, but he gets a leadoff home run, 4th of the campaign off of Chris Sale. And for Sale, he does give up 3 runs over the course of 7 innings, but more than enough to be able to get the job done here, as Pierce Johnson, Tyler Mazick, they're both able to supply a scoreless inning as well. The Detroit Tigers have been very much an under team this year, along with the Minnesota Twins, but on this day, they scored enough for an over, and it was the Twins who fell to the Tigers by a count of 5-4. For Detroit, Captain Jack Flaherty, 10 punch-outs, gives up 4 runs, but only 2 of which were earned over the course of 6 innings. He was hurt by an error out there in the field, so that was a little bit less than terrific. New right fielder Wenciel Perez had an error, and he did give up a home run along the way, going deep for Minnesota. Trevor Larnach for his first home run in the campaign. That said, he was pretty rock solid, as Joe Ryan was not. 4 runs surrendered over the course of 5 1/3 innings, but both bullpens were solid for the Twins. He did have Cale Theobar give up a run in the 9th inning. It was via a single by Mr. Perez, who committed the error, so thanks payback there. Brock Stewart, Griffin Jacks both supply a scoreless inning, and Cody Funderburk gets a pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Meanwhile, for Detroit, Andrew Chafin, Will Vest, they combine for 2 scoreless innings, and Jason Foley closes the door for a scoreless inning to be able to get that one to the window. Also being able to get to the window, the Houston Astros haven't been able to say that too much this season, but 5-3, they're able to take down the Washington Nationals, as for Houston, they played 8 overs, 11 unders to just 2 pushes, and for Justin Verlander, first start back, pretty solid. 2 runs surrendered over the course of 6 innings, only 4 strikeouts. He seems to be just a little bit down in general with his swing and miss stuff, as Riley Adams got a 2nd home run in the campaign, but bullpen from there at his back. He did have Josh Hader give up a run in an inning, and he's rocking an 8.38 ERA right now, but Ryan Presley, Brian Abreu, they both supply a scoreless inning, and for the Washington Nationals, you get a, shall we say, not-so-great start out of Mackenzie Gore. Only gives up 3 runs over the course of 4 innings, but only went 4 innings. From there, you did have to have Matt Barnes come into the game. He gives up a run in an inning. Dylan Floro, Tanner Rainey, they both give you a scoreless inning. Derek Law, along with Robert Garcia, they combine for 2 innings. They allow 1 run along the way as well. You saw the Chicago White Sox continue to be the sad Chicago White Sox and lose another one. This by a count of 7-0 for the White Sox. 6 overs, 12 unders, and a push. They are tied with the Mariners and the St. Louis Cardinals for highest under rate in all baseball. And for the White Sox, absolutely nothing doing in this one. Spencer Turnbull goes out there for 7 scoreless innings, gave up 1 in. Matt Strom, Orion Kierking, hopefully I said that correctly, both give you a scoreless inning. And for the Phillies, they had a trio of home runs while the White Sox had 2 total hits. Alec Boehm goes deep twice for his 2nd and 3rd home runs of the campaign off of Garrett Crochet, and Garrett Crochet gives one up to Whit Merrifield, his 1st home run of the campaign for Crochet after a nice start to the season. Gives up those 3 home runs, 7 runs in total over the course of 3 innings. Chris Flexen, though, 4 scoreless innings out of the bullpen, and Tim Hill was able to supply a scoreless inning as well. For the Pittsburgh Pirates, they did not get what they were looking for out of Quinn Pricer. The Red Sox, who have been banged up, they get the job done by a count of 8-1, as for the Red Sox. A trio of home runs in this one. Pricer gives one up to Rob Revsander, his first of the campaign. Tristan Casas, his sixth. And then you had Aronsi Contreras give it up to Sadine Rafaela, his first home run of the campaign. And then, forgot to mention, Pricer also gave up another one to Wyler Abreu, his first home run of the campaign for Pricer. Gives up five runs, four of which were earned over the course of four and a third innings. Contreras from there gives up the other home run. Three runs in total over the course of two innings. Josh Fleming, though, pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Hunter Strand was able to give you a two scoreless innings as well, but for the Buccos, they go 0 of 10 with men in scoring position as Brian Bale was tremendous. Gives up just one hit and six scoreless innings. You had the Boozer and Mr. Cam Boozer make his MLB debut at age 31. Gave up a run in an inning. Chase Anderson, two scoreless innings. So Boston finds a way to the window, and so does the New York Yankees. 5-3, they're able to take down the Tampa Bay Rays. For the Rays, Tyler Alexander, actually a very good start. 5 1/3 innings, doesn't allow anything, but something I've been learning you of is that this bullpen of the Tampa Bay Rays right now struggling. Chris Stavinsky gives up 5 runs in his inning of work. Now, they were all unearned runs. There were a pair of errors out there in the field that absolutely destroyed them as Yandy Diaz had an error, Curtis Meade had an error. So that was rough to say the least, but for the New York Yankees, they made them pay as Juan Soto was able to utilize those errors and cranked his 5th home run of the season off of Davinsky. And for Clark Schmidt, he was very good in this one. Solo home run surrendered over the course of 5 1/3 innings. Going deep, Richie Palacios, his 2nd home run of the campaign. You did see Ian Hamilton give up 2 runs in an inning, but Dennis Santana, 5 outs out of the bullpen scoreless. Clay Holmes was able to supply a scoreless inning, and then you did see Sean Armstrong for the Rays give you a pair of outs out of the bullpen scoreless, and you were able to get a scoreless inning as well out of Jacob Lopez. So, very interesting day of baseball on Friday, and if you're taking a look at the full season betting trends that we've got right now, road teams still doing very well, hitting 52.5% on the money line, 156 and 141. Meanwhile, favorites, they're not hitting it above 59.2%. With the juice, it makes it a little bit rough, but they've been playing much better recently, and we've still got a lead with regards to overs on the totals, 146 overs to 142 unders. And if you're looking at the last 7 days in Major League Baseball, it has been very much an underwhelming stretch. 50 unders to just 44 overs. Meanwhile, favorites hitting at a 64.2% clip, 61-34 on the money line. So that's what we all saw in Major League Baseball on Friday, and that's what we're getting trend-wise. And coming up next, how about if we do take a look at a little bit more at the Saturday games and how weather should be changing our perspective on some of these games. We're going to be doing so with Rob Donaldson of the Rob's Best Bets Show right here on the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now a part of the VSiN Family Podcast.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
Ever back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. It is always great to be joined by this man as we got Rob Donaldson aboard. He does great work with the show slash podcast, Rob's Best Bet Show, over on YouTube.com/Rob Donaldson. I know that he does an amazing job taking a look at this great game of baseball that we all know and love. He is very hard at work, whether it be player props, sides, totals, you name it. He does it. He also does a great job on the college basketball front end. You're able to follow him on Twitter/X at RobDFB altogether. And Rob, always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Yeah, always a pleasure to hop on, Greg. And yeah, it's already been a fun baseball season. We're getting some really nice weather in the early portion of the season as well, even though we did have a game that basically was a snow out. So I guess there are some parts of the country that are getting a little bit of chillier temperatures, but it's baseball season full swing. It's been a good time.
Hey, having done college broadcasts for UW Oshkosh and their college baseball team, I have been snowed out on occasion. So I am actually very used to it, to say the least. Yeah, don't find it very often, but hey, I remember being out there in the great state of Wisconsin, April 15th, tax day. One year we got 8 inches of snow. So it does happen from time to time. But that said, how much does weather play a factor when it comes to taking a look at some of these games? Because as we know, Wrigley Field has been having some very windy conditions, and no doubt about it, that's the most prevalent out of these ballparks that has affected totals with regards to the weather. But how much do you dive in on that? Because I think that this part of this time of year, just what you're getting weather wise, it probably plays as big of an impact as you're going to find all season long.
Absolutely. And with those kind of windy environments or windy venues or ballparks, those are more so the unpredictable factors where you're just kind of hoping that the gusts stay consistent the entire way through and that the balls just don't fly out of the ballpark after, you know, they should have been a pop fly. And so sometimes predicting the Wrigley conditions are different than, you know, just kind of standard weather looking into for your research side of things. And yeah, the weather you're kind of looking for is just don't be super windy, don't be super chilly. And even when you kind of get into the deep part of summer, you know, not even having those really hot, hot games, because fatigue hits these players in those hot games, kind of like, you know, after a long stretch of just consistent ball game after ball game. And so, yeah, weather definitely plays a massive factor in this sport, probably more so than any other sport in the world.
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes you'll find that in football with some of these teams that they're not used to the heat of Miami during like September, October, and then no doubt about it, teams coming up from the southern part of the country having to play in Lambeau Field in December, that's certainly going to take a little bit out of them as well. But to your point as well, with Wrigley Field, the wind blowing in 15 miles an hour versus blowing out 15 miles an hour. Want to talk about an impact. That is a very, very massive impact. And just how are you going to be taking a look at this double dip between the Miami Marlins and the Chicago Cubs? Because we don't have any numbers up on really either of these games, but I do take a look at this double dip, and it's one that very much does intrigue me, as it looks like in game number two for the Miami Marlins, they're going to be throwing out there a guy who at the AAA level has a north of 10 ERA right now, Mr. Munoz, which that's not tremendous to say the least. And I think that the way that we take a look at game one between Asil Cesarro and Javier Assad versus Rodery Munoz and Choto Imanaga, probably going to be very, very different.
Yes, very, very different. And I do think there's going to be a pride factor here with the Marlins coming up at some point in time, because this is a team that made the playoffs last year and kept most of their core outside of really Jorge Soler and Miguel Rojas. And so when you're kind of looking at this team and looking at, you know, even the starting pitching that they're going to have throughout the season, I do think that they're going to have some stretches of pretty good ball put in place. You know, whether or not that's going to be in this weekend's matchups, who knows? But I do think the 4-16 record is what's catching a lot of people's eyes. And I think there's a lot of inherent value because of that.
Absolutely. And I do think that it's going to be really intriguing to see what we do get up on the board, because the wind conditions are going to be moving around all throughout the day. And just looking at the man that is going to be pitching in game number one, at Rodery Munoz, he's currently at the minor league level getting fewer than 6 strikeouts per 9 innings and north of 10 walks per 9 innings. That just doesn't look good, to say the least, for the Miami Marlins in game number two. As joining me on the show, this always looks good, we've got Rob Donaldson. He does great work with the show / podcast, Rob's Best Bets, and he's going to be right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And then I do want to touch upon this, because with the LA Dodgers right now, it's to be determined as to who they're going to be starting. A little bit earlier on, I was seeing on ESPN perhaps Gavin Stone, and if a guy like a Gavin Stone gets a start here, how would you be gauging this game? Because I honestly think we might get a little bit of a bet on spot for the New York Mets with Jose Buto going on the mound, because when we talk about young starting pitchers that are really rising up, I don't hear Buto's name at all. As a matter of fact, I don't hear really anyone buzzing about him, but every time I've looked at one of his starts, I've honestly been really impressed by him.
Absolutely. And, you know, we talk about, you know, baseball being one, a do factor sport and a sport that kind of goes in waves. Well, look at the New York Mets, who have already experienced some insane turbulence to their season. They started off 0-5. Everything looked like a disaster. Their bullpen was blowing saves. They couldn't score runs. And even though they were tagging the ball, it didn't really matter because it was with two outs and nobody on base. Well, now everything that just kind of accumulated over those games that they lost are turning into wins, and they're 8-2 over their last 10 and have a winning record of 10-8. When you are looking at this team, I think there's still a lot of inherent value because of the perception of how the Mets started. And obviously the other side of the coin being that the Dodgers are some super team that they're being billed as. And, you know, that's largely going to be the case. But when you have a guy like Gavin Stone potentially going on the bump for the Dodgers, that's their Achilles heel, that fourth and fifth starter in the rotation, because they haven't really found consistency there. And I think that's the spot to fade.
Yep, absolutely. And I do think that with this LA Dodgers team, they're going to be able to continue to hit. But I mean, we saw them a few days ago against the Washington Nationals get shut out by Jake Irvin. And sometimes that's just baseball. The best offenses, sometimes they get shut down, and sometimes worse offenses, they just find a way to be able to get a bloop and a blast to be able to pull off some of these games. So I do think that that is always something to be mindful of. And as of right now, don't have any numbers up on that game, but we do have numbers for this one, as I do think that an intriguing spot for this weekend is taking a look at this Orioles versus Royals series, just because it feels like the Royals are trying to be like what we've seen out of the Baltimore Orioles the last few years, a team that came up from being absolutely awful, losing 100-plus games a year, to now being able to take that step forward. And if they're going to do so, they're probably going to need Cole Ragans, who's going to be starting on Saturday, to be that ace. And he's going up against Corbin Burns, and the Orioles are about -130 favorites, total of 8. How do you evaluate this matchup with an Orioles team that has been towards the top of the league in terms of so many of these offensive categories, but we've also got a battle of aces in this game as well?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you nailed it with your analysis as well about the Royals just trying to emulate what the Orioles have done the past two seasons. And I think they actually even have a higher starting point than what the Orioles kind of coming up teams had, because their starting pitching talent is far superior to some of those Orioles teams that were only had really 2 to 3 guys that were some sort of reliable for a game-by-game start. And with the Royals, I think they have multiple guys in this rotation that could really blossom into something more than what they even are right now. And it really just kind of comes down to how is that bullpen really going to finish out games for him? And so when you are looking at that kind of dynamic, I do think that a Baltimore Orioles team total under is certainly a play there, through at least maybe through the first five, and also just a full game under with Corbin Burns on the bump. I think it's going to be a game where the pitching is really just going to neutralize both offenses.
And I do think that this is going to be one of the better games that we're going to be getting all weekend long, and could be a little bit of a race for the Cy Young between those two as well if you're looking at the early odds. So it is very, very early to be taking a look on that front. But it's not too early to be taking a look at what we might be getting in the NLS, certainly. You know, the Dodgers are that top team out there. But that said, the Arizona Diamondbacks, the San Francisco Giants, they're looking to rise up. And Zach Gallen does find himself as a minus 125 favorite in this spot with a total of 8. But I want to get your thoughts on how you evaluate this, because I personally have had to handicap Zach Gallen very differently when he's away from home rather than when he's at home. Because if this were a spot where you'd be laying your typical juice when you flip it for home field, I'd be willing to back Zach Gallen in this spot. I always have my trepidations with him on the road, though.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in the same boat with you. And when you look at Zach Gallen, something that has been prevalent throughout his career so far, and it is still a very relatively young career at that, he's flirted with these hard hit percentages that sort of underline his numbers. They will come back to bite him at certain spots. We've already kind of seen him, you know, go to Colorado, to your point, and give up 8 hits through 5 innings and 3 earned runs. But he kind of mitigated some of that damage, and this is kind of what he always does because he has that strikeout ability in his bag. So there's definitely a lot of different factors that are at play with Zach Gallen, but something that I think is a tried and true high upside play anytime he's on the bump is taking the over in the game, especially if you don't like the other pitcher on the other side. And Kyle Harrison, I'm not really too big of a fan of. So when you see this total sitting at 7.5, 8 runs, I think that we could get that potentially by the 6th or 7th inning and be really happy with it.
I think so as well. And I do think that when it comes to that NL West, obviously you've got the Dodgers as that number one team, but the teams that are pretty much 2 through 4, sorry, Colorado Rockies, they're all going to be very competitive looking for that number two spot. So I think that that's going to be valuable to dive in on. As joining me on the show, we do have Rob Donaldson, and joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And then I do have to really highlight this game as well, because going into the day on Thursday, the team that was dead last in terms of bullpen ERA was the Tampa Bay Rays. Now, they go on the road. They face off against a guy, Nestor Cortes, that I was talking about home at road splits with Zach Gallen. Well, Nestor Cortes certainly has his, as the Yankees are about minus 130, minus 135. How do you dive in on this matchup with a Rays bullpen that traditionally is good, but this year is stunk, and a guy, Nestor Cortes, who is very much got his home in road splits?
Absolutely. Yeah, you kind of nailed it with this. Rays bullpen has always been a consistent piece over the last few years. Pete Fairbanks struggling and a few other guys in that bullpen struggling, and even losing at Andrew Kittredge in the offseason. They've really hit a sharp decline, and this is what happens with bullpens. It's one of the most unreliable portions of your team year by year, and so you've got to constantly be just kind of feeding into it and bringing in new life. Well, they didn't, and I think they're going to pay for it up until the trade deadline, or even, you know, maybe they kind of jump the gun and make a trade way before the trade deadline to acquire an arm. But I think until then, that's going to be a constant issue. So I kind of like, again, the over here of 8.5, 8 runs. And I would even kind of look at Nestor Cortes and the Yankees just on the money line or the run line.
Absolutely. And then in terms of the way that you've been playing some props this year as well, because I know that you've been doing a great job on that front. I know that you've been able to cash quite a few home run props here in the last 10 days. So good on you for that. But what are some of the things that you might be taking a look at for Saturday? Because it's a little bit of an intriguing spot, and I'm sure that you've picked up on this much like myself going into Friday. Now, we don't know how the games for Friday went, but over the last 7 days or so, after things were very overwhelming to begin the season, it does feel like we've gotten a few more unders, and it does feel like the offenses have calmed down a little bit.
Yeah, and I do think part of that is just because of the drops in temperature. I mean, even 2 weeks back, we had 70s across the board throughout the Midwest, and obviously you have teams that play with a roof over them as well, and so you have controlled weather environments. Well, you know, this past week has been kind of a little bit of a cold front where you're getting 40s and 50s type ball games and a lot of precipitation. So again, you know, we're talking about weather because it's really relevant when you're talking about this sport. And I think that the overs and the unders kind of come and go this time of year in waves because of that factor. And so that's definitely something to monitor when you're moving forward here.
Yep, and you'll find it day in and day out as well, because when you've got a lot of the number ones going, you'll get lower scoring games. And then when you've got the old bullpen games, it's a little bit more difficult to be able to get those overs to a little bit more difficult to get those unders to come through for you as well. So certainly always something to be mindful of. And Rob, is there any games that we have yet to take a look at that are really catching your attention for Saturday, whether it be something that you're going to be betting on, or maybe it's not even something that you're betting, but something that you just want to watch and you're intrigued by?
Yeah, I'm taking a look at that Brewers-Cardinals game, and I will preface this by saying, yes, I am a Cardinals fan, and I know you're a Brewers fan, so we might be on the flip side of the fandom coin here, but at the same time, DL Hall is a guy that has been getting tagged a little bit in his last two outings, and as a lefty, there's a lot of righties in this Cardinals lineup who are hitting the baseball extremely hard right now. I think that spells kind of a disaster for that start, at least through the first five innings, so that's kind of how I want to sharpen this coin is, you know, take the team total over for the Cardinals, take them through the first five, maybe laying that half run. And I think you're going to end up extracting a lot of value for an offense that has underperformed, but I think is going to start stepping up a little bit here.
Yep, for that offense, it has been a case where they just have not been able to get online for the St. Louis Cardinals. And that Brewers offense has been one of the biggest surprises in all baseball. Cooled off, though, in that series against the San Diego Padres. But going up against Miles Michaelis, I do think that we could be seeing ourselves quite a few runs in this one on both sides. And a man that is always on some great runs and a man that always does a great job taking a look at this game. That'd be you, Rob. You do amazing work over on your YouTube feed, youtube.com/Rob Donaldson. I know that you do just a little bit of everything, and I know that you're getting prepared for some football as well. So let the good people at home know what's all on tap for you and how people are able to follow along on social media and other platforms.
And always appreciate you having me on, Greg. It's fun to talk ball with somebody who really can appreciate the attention to detail, because this is a sport that requires a lot of it. So I always appreciate you having me on. And for those who are wanting to follow my bets, you can do so at my YouTube or my Twitter or X at RobDFB, or on YouTube, just my name, Rob Donaldson. And as always, Greg, really appreciate having me on.
Always great to be able to get Rob aboard. His insights on baseball are really second to none. Always does a great job breaking down the card with me, and did so once again today. So big thanks to Rob for joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Saturday as we are Jamal.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express.
Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel... It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Breaking down every game, every day in Major League Baseball, this is the Baseball Betting Show. Here is your host, Greg Peterson.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for the Baseball Betting Show with myself, Greg Peterson, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. It is always great to get Rob Donaldson aboard. He does amazing work over at youtube.com/Rob Donaldson, taking a look at this great game that we all know and love and doing a great job on both the player prop front along with being able to take a look at these full games. And every single time he joins this show, lends such good insight. So big thanks to Rob for joining me right here on the Baseball Betting Show. And now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this Baseball Saturday as we touch them all.
If a game is listed on the betting board, Greg has a side and a total on it, so it is time to touch them all.
Do note that as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter /X feed at GNet_81. And we're going to be going in Las Vegas rotation order. This is where we go with the National League games first in time order, then the American League games in time order, and any interleague games. Those are going to be at the bottom. That'll keep things all nice, neat, clean, and easy. So Without further ado, let's dive in and start out with my DK Network write-up. This is 951, 952 on the card. It is the Milwaukee Brewers hitting the road. They're facing off against the St. Louis Cardinals. Miles Michaelis goes for St. Louis. DL Hall is on the bump for the Brew Crew. Brewers are between plus 105 to plus 110 underdogs. Anywhere between minus 118 and minus 125. Then around St. Louis, 8 is the total. Over is minus 125. And the under, it is plus 105. Was torn on this one because I've got the Brewers as a favorite. So I like them on the money line, but ended up writing up the over in this one. Both of these starting pitchers have not been great to say the least. DL Hall, he's got an ERA of a 7.11, so he's always open to giving up runs, and he's got a 7.38 fielding independent, giving up 3.5 walks and getting just 7 strikeouts per 9 innings. Miles Michaelis, about 6 strikeouts to 3 walks per 9 innings, well north of a 5.5 ERA. So both of these guys have been less than tremendous to say the least, but what else has been less than stellar? The St. Louis Cardinals lineup. They're averaging about 3.7 runs per contest entering into this series. That is 24th in all baseball. You know that these guys are going to be able to hit sooner rather than later, but when is a free fall going to stop for some of these guys? You've got Nolan Gorman, Jordan Walker, Victor Scott, Paul Goldschmidt, all entering into the series, hitting below the Mendoza line of 200, and for Goldschmidt, just one home run out of him. Really, frankly, the only guy that's giving you consistent power is Nolan Gorman with 3 home runs at 68 at-bats. I see these guys have been relatively rough, though. I will say for Wilson Contreras, Nolan Arenado, both of these guys hitting right around 300, but you haven't been able to get near Arenado to draw a lot of walks as well. And for this Brewers lineup, they were held down a little bit in that series against the San Diego Padres, but enter into the series averaging north of 7 runs per game away from home. That is number one in the big leagues. And despite the fact that Christian Yelich is currently banged up, you've got a lot of guys that are finding a way on base for this team. How about these young guys like Blake Perkins, Sal Frelick, Bryce Terang, all hitting above a 300 entering into the series. William Contreras, the other Contreras, 4 home runs with a north of 400 on base. You've got also Willy Adames looking quite a bit better in terms of being able to move the line in that perspective as well. And the Brewers, in my opinion, have a little bit of a better bullpen despite the fact that both of these seemed relatively equal entering into the series with regards to their bullpen ERA. With the St. Louis Cardinals 9th in the league, about a 3.27 ERA. Brewers right around about a 3.40, 11th in the league with that regard. But for the Cardinals, only guy that returned from last season that had a sub-3.50 ERA on the roster was Ryan Helsley. I do think that we're going to see regression from the likes of Andre Pallante, Ryan Tepera, Brian Fernandez, these guys. And for the Milwaukee Brewers, I really love the fact that last year, Hobie Milner, Joel Piamps, Elvis Piguero, all these guys had a sub-3.5 ERA. Ebner Uribe is able to throw 100+. He's very good in lockdown in the back half of starts. And for DL Hub, you've got a lot of upside here. He's a young 25-year-old former first-round pick and was the main trade piece with regards to that Corbin Burns trade, with the Brewers certainly got fleeced on, to say the least. But that said, I do think that he's going to be able to do a solid job against a St. Louis Cardinals lineup that just really hasn't been too tremendous thus far this season. And for the Brewers, they do a tremendous job of hitting righties. They have had all sorts of problems against lefties. And for the St. Louis Cardinals, with Michaelis not being a lefty, I think that that's going to cause for doomsday. So my write-up pick is going to be on the over. Was torn on this one as I also made the Brewers the favorite. So looking at that Brewers money line at a plus number, and my write-up is the over. Now we hit our double dip. This is 953, 954, 981, 982. We'll do these both together as it is Miami Marlins on the road facing off against the Chicago Cubs. In game number one, Asus Cesardo goes for the Miami Marlins, and Javier Assad is on the bump for the Cubs. No numbers up on either of these games, by the way. And then game two, it's going to be Roderi Munoz going for the Miami Marlins and Shota Imanaga going for the Cubs. And we'll start with the Lizardo versus Assad game first. And in this one, I'm going to lay up to a minus 159 with the Cubs, plus 161 or higher. Looking at the Marlins, I set my number at a minus 160. And anything about plus 120 or higher, I'd be laying a run and a half with the Cubs. And then somebody told us 7.9, so 7.5 or less. Looking at the over, 8 or higher, I'm going to be taking a look at the under. The win conditions are going to be very interesting with regards to these games, because it does feel like the wind is going to be pretty strong towards the daytime. Gonna die down a little bit more towards the nighttime, but obviously it gets a little bit cooler towards the nighttime as well, so you have to play many aspects there. But I do think that Javier Assad going to be able to continue to go out there, just for lack of a better term, throw strikes for this bunch. For Javier Assad, he is not some sort of a strikeout artist, and I do think that there might be a little bit of regression coming from sooner rather than later. Since he became a starter, he's been able to post up a sub-3.3 ERA last season with the Cubs. He had a 4.29 fielding independent to just a 3.05 ERA, and thus far this season, 3.68 fielding independent, a sub-2.25 ERA, getting just 6 hits per 9 innings, so he's done a good good job on balls in play. He has given up about 2.7, 2.8 walks per nine innings, but has been a little bit better on that front thus far this season. And he gets to go up against a Miami Marlins lineup that has been dealing with injuries to Jake Berger, who's really their top power bat. And they do have guys that are able to move the line for the team. You've been able to have Luis Arraez after a really rough start to the season. Last 2 weeks, he's back hitting about a 300-plus there. You've got Tim Anderson, who entered into the series hitting about a 275 himself. But I mean, who's going to be able to provide that thump? You've got Brian De La Cruz, who's been able to give you four home runs. He's providing about a 285 average, but also 294 on base as well. And then Jesus Sanchez, Nick Gordon, Emmanuel Rivera, Nate Fortes, Josh Bell. These are all guys bearing a 220 or lower. Vidal Brujan is completely useless with a bat. And for the Chicago Cubs, Matt Bush, how good has this guy been? He had a string of five straight games with a home run. You've got a lot of guys in general that I think at the end of the year, they're going to be hitting right around about a 275 with like 20 or so home runs. Christopher Morel has been struggling to be able to reach base, but he, Ian Happ, Dansby Swanson, they're all sort of cut from the same cloth. Cody Bellinger, back-to-back multi-hit games. Looks like he's returning to form as well. Miguel Amaya has been rock solid, and this is a Cubs unit that is right now supplying north of 7 runs per game at home. I think that that's going to be dying down a little bit. I do think that we're going to see some regression on that front, but I do think that they're going to get to a guy in Jesús Luzardo, who last year posted up an ERA that was about 1.75 points higher when he was away from home versus when he was at home. He clearly has pitched so much better throughout his career when he has been in Miami. He's able to give you about 10 strikeouts per 9 innings, and command has gotten a little bit better, but this bullpen has been absolutely awful for the Miami Marlins, and they had to use up quite a bit of it yesterday because our good friend AJ Puck just continues to not be starter quality. So as a result, you've got a lot of guys that have been used up in recent days, and George Soriano has been completely useless for the team. Tanner Scott has been awful. And then for the Chicago Cubs, they do a good job of being able to mix and match as well. Javier Assad can't give you a lot of length. You know what? You do have a few long guys out there that are able to hold down the fort. Colton Brewer is able to give you multiple innings. Edmer Alzolay has been used more as a closer, but by trade, he was a starter just a few short years ago as well. Hector Neris has been able to do a solid job for an inning or two. Yancy Almonte is a little bit up and down, but I think the Cubs have a lot of edges here, so I'm going to be willing to lay up to a minus 159 on this money line. At plus 120 or higher, we'll be laying a run and a half with the Cubs, and then 7.5 or less, looking at the over, 8 or higher to the under. We need at least a plus 161 with Luzardo to take a shot there, and then in 981, 982, this is just rough. I set the Miami Marlins where I need at least a plus 237 to take a shot on that money line. I'm willing to lay up to about a minus 125 when it comes to the Cubs on the run line, and I made them a money line favorite of minus 236. And then this is a total where I set it to where an 8.5 or less, I'm looking at the over 9 or higher to the under. I do think that the conditions are going to be a little bit better in game number 2 rather than game number 1. And for Imanaga, his first few starts for the Cubs have been absolutely pristine. 15 and a third innings, has given up 2 walks, 1 unearned run, 16 strikeouts. He has been the real deal and a half for this team. Going up against a guy in Rodery Munoz, who I have absolutely no faith in whatsoever. This is a guy that I believe that he came over from overseas from the Dominican Republic. He spent some time in the Braves farm system here at Jacksonville this season. I recognize that it's a small sample size of 3 appearances, but at the AAA level thus far this season, a 10.97 ERA, giving up 10.1 walks and getting 5.9 strikeouts per 9 innings. That's not great. That's not great at all. And you just take a look at his AAA career numbers, a 6.57 ERA with less than 9 strikeouts and 6.8 walks per 9 innings. Like, I don't know what we're doing here with the Miami Marlins. They have no idea how to pick out starters at this point. He's not backed up by a very good offense. He's backed up by a terrible bullpen. Like, I just don't see any path forward for the Cubs in this one. I do think that Imanaga is going to be seeing a little bit of regression. And like I said, I do think that condition's going to be a little bit better for hitting. So, in effort less, looking at the over 9 or higher to the under end with the Cubs, I'd be willing to lay up to a minus 125 with that run line. I would need at least a plus 237 to take a shot on the Marlins on the money line. 955, 956 on the betting board. It is the New York Mets. They're facing off against the LA Dodgers. Jose Buto is going to be going for the Metropolitans. As of right now, it is to be determined on the betting board for the LA Dodgers, so this is a game that is presently off the board. When I was checking ESPN initially, it was looking like Gavin Stone, and if we do get Mr. Stone against Jose Buto, I'd be saying the Dodgers at a minus 157, so we need at least plus 158 to take a shot on the Mets, and I'd most likely look Dodgers run line or Mets money line, and I would need at least a plus 115 to lay a run and a half with the Dodgers. Reason why I say that, for the Dodgers since the beginning of the 2022 campaign. They have won all but 35 of their regular season wins by multiple runs, and in that time span, they have won 224 regular season games. So they're either winning by multiple runs or they're losing outright, but also did set my total at 9.4, so 9 or less. Looking at the over 9.5 prior to the under. Gavin Stone actually coming off of a really nice start against the San Diego Padres. Prior to that start against the Padres, and that was a game that had a two-hour rain delay in there to be able to help him out and get those bats tired. He had a career 9 ERA. He just doesn't look too cut out for the major leagues at this point. He's given up 3 walks per 9 innings. To his credit, he's been able to keep the ball in the yard thus far this season after last year. He had a little bit of issue there, but I just feel like Gavin Stone, he might be a good starter down the line, but I just don't think that he's quite there yet. You might be looking at guys like a Kyle Hurt to be able to give you some long relief, but it's an LA Dodgers bullpen that's had their struggles this far this season. In the bottom half of the big leagues, with regards to bullpen ERA, Alex Vesey has been a little bit up and down. Love what Evan Phillips has been able to provide for the team, but after Ryan Brazier was so great a season ago, we've seen some regression there. And then you got a Mets bullpen that does have Edwin Diaz out there now. Other than Edwin Diaz, it could be a little bit of a roll of the dice, but I've always liked Brooks Raley and sort of that bridge role. He does a solid job on that front. You've been able to get a few solid innings out of Adam Ottavino when he's been out there, but I know that he's been in and out as well. But I do like what I'm seeing out of Jose Buto. We were talking about it with Rob Donaldson. 1 run surrendered in 12 innings as far this season, and when he got his opportunities as a starter last year, he was pretty good as well. He gets swings and misses, sometimes gives up a couple too many walks in his first start of the season, did have those 3 walks against the Detroit Tigers, but all in all, I actually really like what I've seen out of Jose Buto. Question is, what form of the Mets are you going to get? Because the Mets are either going to give you like 7 runs or they're going to give you 1. They're not going to be anywhere in between. Pete Alonso, 6 home runs as far this season. He and Starling Marte of the Marte Parte, both hitting between about a 262-270, but then you've got Francisco Lindor, DJ Stewart, along with Jeff McNeil, hitting below 225. You expect these guys to be able to pick it up a little bit. Francisco Alvarez has been inconsistent, but he's been able to move the line a little bit more this season. And you know that this is a Dodgers lineup that is pretty much a death star at this point. Mookie Betts being able to slug 6 home runs going into yesterday, hitting north of a 360. Shohei Ohtani hitting a 360 with 4 bombs. Teoscar Hernandez, 5 home runs. He's moving the line. I mean, it's incredible, but I will say this about the LA Dodgers. Very top-heavy lineup. First 5 hitters are about as fearsome as it gets. And then you've got Kike Hernandez, Chris Taylor, James Altman, Gavin Lux, all hitting below the Mendoza line of 200, so that's been a little bit of an issue, but the Dodgers are always one of the best teams at being able to draw walks in all of baseball as well, but I do think that for the Mets, they're going to be able to remain relatively lively here, so if I can get about a plus 158 or higher, I'd be looking at the Mets, minus 156 or less on the money line, plus 115 or higher on the run line, looking at the Dodgers, and then 9 or less, I'd like the over 9.5 or higher, the under 957, 958 on the bank board, the Arizona Diamondbacks hit the road face-off against the San Francisco Giants, as you've got Kyle Harrison on the bump for the Giants, Zach Allen goes for the Diamondbacks. Diamondbacks do find themselves as road favorites. And between minus 120 to minus 125 is the number there. And between plus 105 to plus 110 is that number on San Francisco. 7.5 to 8 is the total. On the 8, under is minus 120, and the over is even. On the 7.5, the over is between minus 115 to minus 120, and the under is anywhere between even and minus 105. And with the San Francisco Giants, I made them the very, very slim minus 101 favorites. I'm going to be taking a look at them on the money line. It's exactly what we were talking about with our good friend Rob Donaldson, with Zach Gallen. This is a guy that I always want to be backing at home. He does a very rock solid job when he's in Arizona. It's as if, for lack of a better term, he loses his superpowers when he hits the road, though. You take a look at his 2023 numbers, just because I believe he's only got 1 road start this far this season. Had a 2.47 home ERA, had a 4.42 ERA on the road. On the road, gave up about 1.25 home runs per 9 innings. At home, gave up just under 0.65 home runs per 9 innings. So just a night and day difference with Zach Gallen. And his velocity's been a little bit down this season after he had a massive workload a season ago. Meanwhile, you've got Kyle Harrison, who's a little bit inconsistent. We've seen him be up and down, but I mean, he's been able to hold down the fort with 3 runs or fewer surrendered in 3 out of his first 4 starts. He's able to get some swings and misses this far this season, only about 8 strikeouts per 9 innings, but has also only issued 4 walks in 23 innings as well. I do like his overall upside. Now, what I don't like for the San Francisco Giants is that this has been a bottom 10 team in terms of bullpen ERA thus far this season, but Taylor and Tyler Rogers are relatively solid. You've got Camilo Duval, one of the better closers that you're going to find in the big leagues. The big question is, can these guys that are a little bit, shall we say, further down the line, like Eric Miller, K-Way, Tang, guys like this, be able to hold down the fort? Meanwhile, you've got a Diamondbacks bullpen that it's been relatively league average as far this season. They're without Luis Frias, which is not a bad thing for them. Miguel Castro has been rough, but Justin Martinez is a young gun who's right around 22 years old who should be able to give this team a little bit of help. I like what I've seen out of Kyle Nelson and Ryan Thompson this far this season, and for the Arizona Diamondbacks, they've done a really nice job of being able to put bat to ball to begin the season, especially Ketel Marte along with Lourdes Gurriel. Both of these guys have supplied 5-plus home runs this far this season. You've got Christian Walker's inconsistent, but 3 home runs, about a 391 on base. When he's hot, he's hot. When he's cold. And you do have to expect Corbin Carroll, who's got just one home run and a 225 average entering into the series, to be able to pick it up a little bit. Meanwhile, for the San Francisco Giants, you've had some very good production with regards to home run power. Matt Chapman and Ori Soler, their two big offseason acquisitions, combined 7 home runs. You've got Chapman, though, providing a 256 on base. Ori Soler, he's providing about a 345 on base. He's coming along for the ride, but you need a little bit more in terms of just being able to find a way on base. Lamont Wade Jr. has been tremendous with this front, 474 on base, but it's just been a little bit sporadic for the San Francisco Giants. I have liked what I've seen out of Michael Conforto, though. He's been able to supply 4 home runs, and as we know with the San Francisco Giants, they always score fewer runs when they're at home rather than away from home. It's not because they forget how to hit when they're at home. It's just because it's one of the most pitcher-friendly ballparks that you're going to be finding in the big leagues, which is why I did set my total at 7.7, mostly seeing 8s, and personally I'd rather have an 8-under rather than a 7.5 over, because even though Zach Gallen does have his inconsistencies when he's away from home, I still do think that he's going to be able to deliver an okay start, but I do think that Kyle Harrison is able to put it together and get the job done for the San Francisco Giants. So looking at any sort of plus price I can get with the Giants on the money line, and going to be taking a look at this 8-under. 959, 960 on the betting board. The New York Yankees are going to be playing against the Tampa Bay Rays. Zach Eflin hopes to not be Eflin awful for the Rays, and you've got Nestor Cortes on the bump for the Yankees. The Yankees between minus 130 to minus 135 favorites, between plus 114 to plus 120 is that number on Tampa Bay. 8 to 8.5 is the total. On the 8.5, the under is minus 120 to minus 125. Over is between even a plus 105 on the 8. Over and under are anywhere between minus 108 to minus 112. And I will be looking at the over. I did set my total at an 8.6. Something I alluded to with Rob is that this Rays bullpen has been just absolutely atrocious thus far this season. Enter into this series in the bottom two in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. Now, I do think that they are going to be able to pick it up a little bit, because you got Jason Adam, Pete Fairbanks, Colm Boucher. These guys have had a little bit of a rough start to the season, but they've got a track record of success. But at the same time, it's very hard to be backing that. And they go up against a guy in Nestor Cortes, who I was mentioning it with Rob as well. The fact that he's got some very dramatic home and road splits over the last two seasons since the beginning of the 2023 campaign has been posting up an ERA that is darn near 2 points lower when he's at home rather than away from home. And if you just take a look at his overall career splits at home, 330 ERA, 345 ERA when he's away from home. His home runs per nine rate increases by well over 30% when he's away from home as well. So lots of red flags there. Going up against a Tampa Bay Rays unit that just has had a little bit of a tough time putting bat to ball at the top. Randy Arozarena, Yandy Diaz. These are guys you expect to give you a little bit of power, find a way to be able to move the line. Both are giving you less than a 285 on base. Neither of these guys have been able to give you more than two home runs apiece as well. Isak Paredes has been great. He's been able to give you 5 home runs. He's found a way to be able to get on base. And Ahmed Rosario, Ben Rodfit. These guys surprisingly have found a way on base. Jericho Abreu has been halfway okay, but some of these guys towards the bottom of the fold, you just have not gotten a lot out of, like Curtis Mead and company. Meanwhile, for the New York Yankees, it's a little bit hit or miss for this bunch as well. And Aaron Judge, we've seen some flashes from him the last week or so. That home run against the Cleveland Guardians about a week or so ago, that was nice, but still hitting below the Mendoza line of 200. It's been Juan Soto, Anthony Volpe having to carry this team, both giving you a 400 plus on base. Soto hasn't necessarily hit a ton of home runs, but I mean, just the fact that he's able to be a constant for this team is big. You need Gleyber Torres to be able to pick it up a little bit, but with the way that the Rays bullpen is struggling right now, I have to put that into question. As we know, the Yankee Stadium, it's not the world's worst pitcher's park, but with that short porch, you do give up quite a few home runs. And for the Yankees, it is a bullpen that last season was one of the best in the big leagues. And this year, it's been a little bit touch and go. I like what you're able to get out of Ian Hamilton and Jonathan Loaisiga, but you got Jonathan Loaisiga on the injured list. That's been a little bit rough. Getting back around Medanacchio, I think, is going to be relatively solid for the team moving forward. And then Dennis Santana has been halfway decent for the team as well. I do think that the New York Yankees should be pretty good size favorites in this one, even though Zach Eflin has proven that away from home. He's a relatively solid pitcher. His home and road splits, he had darn near the same ERA a season ago when he was away from home versus when he was at home. And for Zach Eflin, he does just a really nice job of locating in general. Since coming over to the Tampa Bay Rays, about 1.1 walks per nine innings and in a Rays uniform, both home splits and road splits, 3.63 ERA, just a 3.13 fielding independent. But I do think that the Yankees are going to be able to get to him. And even if you get like six good innings out of Zach Eflin, this bullpen just not in good form, to say the least. I did set the Yankees at a minus 142 on the money line, so going to be looking there, and I did set my total at 8.6. So I do like the over in this spot, and I do like that Yankees money line. 961, 962 on the betting board. The Detroit Tigers are on the road. They're facing off against the Minnesota Twins as Yaris Olsen on the bump for Detroit, and Bailey Ober is going to be going for the Twins. The Twins are between minus 128 to minus 135 favorites, between plus 114 to plus 120. That number on Detroit, it is a total. Under is minus 115. The over is minus 105. I did set my total at 7.8. I'm going to be looking at the under. You've got two teams that have been absolutely incredible in the bullpen. The Tigers enter into the series number one in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA. You've got a Minnesota Twins team that needed to take it on the chin a little bit against the Baltimore Orioles. That's simply because the Baltimore Orioles have been absolutely slugging the crud out of the ball thus far this season. But even with that, they're number five in the league in terms of a bullpen ERA. This is even with Yoan Duran currently being out of the fold. Brock Stewart has been good. Cody Funderburk has been able to down the fork. Caleb Theobar has been in and out of the fold as well. But all in all, these guys have done a pretty presentable job. Jay Jackson, I think he's going to be able to pick it up moving forward. And then for the Detroit Tigers, you don't necessarily have that one like superstar guy in that bullpen or anything like that, but love what Jason Foley, Andrew Chafin, Will Vess, all of these guys just as a collective are providing. And both of these offenses have been rough. Both of these teams in the bottom six in the big leagues with regards to runs per game. And for Detroit, you've been able to have Kerry Carpenter, Gio Urshela both be able to do a great job hitting about a 300 entering into the series, but don't have a lot of pop out of darn near any of these guys. Mark Canha has been able to give you three home runs, and his on-base percentage is a 382. Batting average, though, is about a 230. You've got nothing whatsoever at Spencer Torkelson this far this season from a power perspective. Zach McKinstry, Carson Kelly, some of these guys at the bottom of the fold are just dead bats. And for the Minnesota Twins, you want to talk about dead bats. In the starting lineup yesterday, you had two guys hitting above 200. Ryan Jeffers along with Alex Kirilloff. They were the only two guys in the starting lineup hitting above 200. They've got not a lot of power. Edouard Julien has been able to give you four home runs this far this season, but I mean, man, it is really rough to say the least. And for Bailey Ober, he does have his tendencies to give up the deep ball. Over the last few seasons, has been giving up about a home run and a half per nine innings, so that does cause you to have a little bit of trepidation here with them. And if you are taking a look at the money line, I would need about 2 cents more to be able to take a shot on the Detroit Tigers. I'm only willing to go up to a minus 122 on Minnesota. I do think that when it comes to the dime lines coming out, I do think that that would put me on the Detroit Tigers in the spot, because with Bailey Ober, even though he is going against a Tigers lineup that's powerless, honestly, I do like this Tigers lineup just a little bit more right now than the Minnesota Twins. And for Ober, even though he doesn't walk a lot of guys, he does give you a lot of opportunities for hard contact, and to his credit, has been able to give you about 9 strikeouts per 9 innings. Meanwhile, for Reese Olson, he's a young gun that has been, in my opinion, just a little bit unlucky at the big league level. 3.98 ERA in his two seasons at the big league level, but a 3.86 fielding independent. Gets about 9 strikeouts, 2.9 walks per 9 innings. Does a relatively solid job of being able to mitigate hard contact, so I do think that for Olson, he's going to be able to go out there, have himself a nice start against a Minnesota Twins team that they are just not finding a way to get on base in general. Now, if you look at the Baseball Savant numbers, some positivity should be coming through, but for Olsen, he's actually had a lower ERA when he's been on the road rather than when he's been at home as well. So, going to be in wait and see mode, but I think I should be able to get a plus 122 year on the Tigers. That's what I'm going to be targeting there. And with regards to the total, 7.9 at 7.8, so you're at the 8, going to be looking at the under. 963, 964 on the betting board. It is the Oakland A's, and they're facing off against the Cleveland Guardians, as it is Logan Allen who's going to be going for the Guardians, and Alex Wood is on the bump for the A's. A's for finding themselves as pretty sizable underdogs. You're going to be getting them in between a plus 136 to a plus 145. Meanwhile, between minus 155 to minus 165. That is your number on the Cleveland Guardians. 8 is the total. Over and under, anywhere between minus 105 to a minus 115. Entering into yesterday, the Oakland A's were very hot on the run line as an underdog. That came a little bit to a head yesterday, but still bullish on the pitching of the Oakland A's. Massive question marks with regards to hitting. So as a result, I did set the Guardians minus 178 on the money line and pretty much was willing to take even money or better with regards to laying a run and a half right now. We are seeing only a few openers on the run line, but right now seeing about plus 125, plus 130. I would be willing to lay that run and a half. Alex Wood, I do have my trepidations with him. He had a rough go of it the last few seasons in a San Francisco ballpark in which very, very much does play to pitchers. And with him now going to Cleveland, it is a little bit more of a pitcher's ballpark for him as well. But the Guardians are just doing a really good job of moving the line in general, and they've had great success against lefties. For the Cleveland Guardians, they've done a tremendous job with having Stephen Kwan being able to hit about a 350 this far this season, and they've got a little bit more power than a season ago. It's not like this team is where they were a season ago, where they were dead stinking last in the big leagues with regards to total home runs, but as a collective against left-handed pitching going into yesterday, 290 batting average, 356 on base, not necessarily generating a bunch of power once again, just three home runs at about 155 at-bats, but have a lot of guys are finding a way to be able to move the line. Jose Ramirez has been a little bit up and down this far this season, but the likes of Josh Naylor, Andrés Giménez, Gabriel Arias, they've been able to find a way to be able to get on, and Naylor Square has been able to provide quite a bit of power. Meanwhile, for the Oakland A's, what has been very beneficial for them has been the bullpen. The bullpen has been absolutely lights out for this team, a top five team with regards to that bullpen ERA, and even though Joe Boyle gave up seven runs yesterday, he managed to be able to fill seven innings, so you're still not in a bad spot for this A's bullpen. The likes of Danny Giménez, Mason Miller, who should still be a starter, by the way. Austin Adams, all these guys, they've done a nice job providing a sub-3 ERA. Michael Kelly has been a nice reclamation story. And for the Cleveland Guardians, this team is in the top three with regards to bullpen ERA as well. Both of these teams have been rock solid, and because they got such a big lead, they pretty much threw out their less than trustworthy guy in Tyler Beede yesterday. So this means that so many of these guys, like Emmanuel Clase, Nick Sandlin, Peter Strzelecki, when he gets out there, Hunter Gaddis, all these guys are going to be relatively good to go. And for the A's, it's just a case where can we find anyone that's able to move the line and get on base? This is a team that has a collective. It's hitting below a 215. You've got a lot of struggling bats out there, even though Shane Langeliers had that three home run game a few weeks ago. He, Brent Rooker, Lawrence Butler, all hitting below a 200 as of right now. Abraham Toro was able to have a nice leadoff home run yesterday, but Zach Lauf has not been able to duplicate some of the success they had a season ago as well. So I do think that the pitching is going to be relatively rock solid here, but still, like I said, do have my trepidations with Alex Wood. And for Logan Allen, he has been having a few struggles. So I do think that the Oakland A's might be able to get a little bit more rolling with regards to the offense here for Logan Allen. Last time out, gives up four runs in 5 2/3 innings against the New York Yankees, and he's given up four home runs at 21 and a third innings thus far this season. The walks have never been great. They've never been terrible with him for his career. About 3.1, 3.2 walks per nine innings. Gets about 8 strikeouts per nine as well. So I do think that the Oakland A's are going to be able to get a little bit more going on offense than they did yesterday. So I did set my total here at an 8.3. Now that we've gone down to an 8, I'm going to be looking at the over because I do think that both of these starters do surrender quite a few runs here, but the bullpens are able to hold it down from there. And I do think that the Guardians do a much better job being able to put bat to ball against the lefty and Alex Wood. So going to be taking a look at the Guardians run line, and I do like this total over as well. 965, 966 on the betting board. The Kansas City Royals play us to the Baltimore Orioles. Corbin Burns is on the bump for the Orioles, and Cole Reagans is going to be on the bump for Kansas City. Kansas City finds themselves as an underdog between plus 110 to a plus 115, between minus 125 to minus 130. That is your number on the Baltimore Orioles total on this game. It is 8, under is minus 115, the over is minus 105. Did set my total at an 8.2. I'm going to be taking a look at the over. Very interesting spot with just two absolutely tremendous aces on the bump, but at the same time, a Baltimore Orioles team that entered into this series with 30 home runs in their first 18 games of the season. This team has just found a way to be able to hit with two outs with such consistency as well. I mean, just take a look up and down the boulevard for this team. Even with Anthony Santander hitting just at the Mendoza line of 200, he was the only out there, top seven guys in the order that entered into yesterday, hitting below a 280, other than Cedric Mullins as well. Mullins was hitting more around about a 260 or so, but I mean, all these guys are finding a way to be able to move the line. Gunnar Henderson has been the main gunner for this team with six home runs, but Santander, Jordan Westberg, you're able to throw in there Colton Cowser, Ryan O'Hearn, Cedric Mullins, all between 4 and 5 home runs entering into yesterday. And because this team has so much depth, they're able to platoon with righties versus lefties as well. For the Kansas City Royals, though, you've been having a little bit of inconsistency with the offense, but Vinny Pascantino, after a rough first 2 weeks of the season, he's starting to find that form that he had when he was really rock solid towards the middle part of the season last year before going down with an injury. He's up to 4 home runs. He's giving you north of a 350 on base. Salvador Perez has been able to give you some nice pop. He and Bobby Witt Jr. both hitting above 300. Both of these guys, 3+ home runs. Now, Mikel Garcia has been able to give you 3+ bombs, but he hasn't really moving the line, and you do need the guys like Hunter Renfro, Kyle Isbell at the bottom of the fold to give you a little bit more. And for the Kansas City Royals, I'm still not necessarily super bullish on this bullpen. James MacArthur is a guy that I'm having a tough time buying into, but if you look at the raw numbers, a 3.60 ERA of the bullpen entering into the series, that's number 12 in the big leagues. They do have a guy that I like in John Schreiber. Chris Sarin is a guy that's been a little bit up and down along Nick Anderson, but Anel Zerpa as a long reliever has actually been halfway decent, and Cole Ragan's just flat out deal. Since getting over to Kansas City towards the back half of the 2023 campaign, is providing a sub 250 ERA, a sub 3 fielding independent thus far this season, 29 strikeouts and 23 and a third innings, allowing just one home run in his first 4 starts of the season. Now, a lot of it has come for naught because the team has provided him with 4 runs or fewer of support in every one of his starts, but he has done his job every sinking time. And you've got a guy in Corbin Burns that when he was with the Milwaukee Brewers for the final 3 seasons he was there, he posted up an ERA about a half a point better when he was away from home rather than what he was at home. Orioles actually have a very comparable bullpen to the Royals in terms of ERA, though I do have a little bit more faith in this Orioles bullpen. You've had Craig Kimbrell actually look halfway decent thus far this season. I don't know how long lasting that's going to be, but so far so good there. Yennier Cano, you know what you're going to be able to get out of him. Danny Colum, these guys have been relatively consistent. And for Corbin Burns, I do think that he's going to be able to go out there and have himself a relatively nice start. As already faced off against the Kansas City Royals once this season, gave up 2 runs in 5 2/3 innings. I do think that he's going to have something similar, but did only get 3 strikeouts there. I do think that the Royals are going to be able to find a way to generate some offense, and I do think that the Orioles do as well. I can only set the Orioles as a -116 favorite because I do think that Reagan's at home lends a relatively solid start, and I do think that the Royals are going to be able to hit a little bit better at home rather than away from home. So here at the 8, going to be looking at the over semi-total at 8.2, and with the Royals at a +116 or better. Right now, I'm starting to see a +118 come onto the board. That's my buy point on their money line to go along the over. 967, 968 on the betting board. The Boston Red Sox at the road to face off against the Pittsburgh Pirates. Mitch Thunder Keller is on the bump for Pittsburgh, and Carter Crawford goes for Boston. Boston is an underdog of anywhere between +105 to +110, anywhere between -120 to -125, seeing it's trading -118. That's your number on Pittsburgh. 8 is the total. Under is between -115 to -120. The over is between even and -105. Set the Pirates at a -128. I'm going to be willing to roll with them on the money line. I actually really like what I've seen out of Carter Crawford. He was so much better on the road rather than at home last season as well. For Carter Crawford, he had an ERA when he was at home of a 6 last year. It was a 2.56 when he was away from home. So certainly some big giant splits there, but I do think that for Crawford, he's going to be able to give a relatively presentable start against the Pittsburgh Pirates. But the big thing for Mitch Keller is that the velocity that was dipped during the spring training months when he was out there for his first start or two, it looks like it's coming back to him. Last 2 starts looked so much better. Gave up a combined 4 runs in 13 innings against the Tigers and the Phillies. Now, granted, not the monsters of the Midway or anything like that, but did get 13 strikeouts in those 2 starts as well. So I do feel like things are starting to come back to him. And for the Pittsburgh Pirates, even though they got absolutely clubbed yesterday, it was a case where because they were getting so badly destroyed, they didn't have to throw out their too many of their trustworthy relievers. They are currently dealing with an injury to Brian Borucki that hurts them a little bit, and Earl Chapman should be out of the fold for this game as well due to suspension. But that's that David Benar, he's a really good guy late in games. Colin Holderman, he's able to give you some relatively good innings as well. Ryder Ryan, he's a little bit hit or miss, but all in all, it's a relatively solid Pittsburgh Pirates bullpen. And for the Boston Red Sox, it's a bullpen that is not great, it's not terrible. You've got so many of these guys that are going to come out there, they're going to do their job. Brandon Bernardino, the opener from a few days ago, has actually been very solid for the team. Greg Weisert is a little bit of a roll of the dice, but he can be pretty good. And if you need multiple innings, Justin Slayton has posted up a sub-1 ERA. I really like what I'm seeing out of him, coupled with Chris Martin, Kenley Jansen. Now, the question for the Boston Red Sox is, can they duplicate the offense that they got yesterday? As you all of a sudden were able to get Rob Revsider along with Wilder Abreu to be able to pop off and have themselves a nice performance, but you still have some of the young guys like Bobby Dalbec, Zadina Rafaela, Emmanuel Valdez hitting well below the Mendoza line of 200. Masataka Yoshida just has not been the guy that they were hoping for, but Tristan Casas certainly has been. 6 home runs, 335 on base, and Jaron Duren has done a nice job moving the line, and after a nice start to the season, the Pittsburgh Pirates have been taking a little bit of a drop-off in terms of their offense as well. You've got Jack Swinitsky, Andrew McCutchen, Henry Davis, just not finding a way to be able to move the line. These guys hitting below the Mendoza line of 200. Oneyel Cruz, he's got great power, but he's only giving you about a 260 in terms of his on-base. Cabrian Hayes, Brian Reynolds, both of these guys about a 370 in terms of their on-base, but not necessarily hitting for a lot of average, not necessarily hitting for a ton of power, but I do think that for the Pittsburgh Pirates, they do find a way here, and I do think that both of these starters do lend a relatively solid start, but I do have trepidations in terms of both of these bullpens as well, but I do think that Ben are going to be the difference here for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and I do like the fact that Mitch Keller, he is seeing that velocity come back to him, and I do think that for both of these teams, they've been a little bit up and down with their offense. I do think that they find a little bit more here, so I did set my total at 8.3. Here at the 8, I'm going to be taking a look at the over, and with the Pirates, one to lay up to a minus 127 with that money line. 969, 970 on the betting board. The Houston Astros hit the road. They're facing off against the Washington Nationals, and the Nationals are throwing out their Trevor Williams. Meanwhile, Ronald Blanco is on the bump for the Astros. Astros find themselves as favorites of anywhere between minus 165 to minus 175, anywhere between plus 143 to plus 153 as your number on Washington. 8.5 to 9 is the total. On the 9, the under is between minus 115 to minus 120. The over is anywhere between even minus 105. On the 8.5, over is minus 125. The under, that is plus 105. And for the Astros, I set them at the money line at a minus 161 if you're looking to lay a run and a half. Right now, we are finding that anywhere between about a minus 105 to a minus 110. And if we're able to get a minus 105 or better, I would be willing to lay the run and a half. I set their money line more around a minus 161. So right now, we're quite out of range for the Washington Nationals unless we do see quite a bit of steam come in. So looking at that Astros run line with Ronald Blanco, he has gone out there and has been absolutely tremendous for the Houston Astros thus far this season. Do expect a little bit of regression out of him as this is his first year really putting it together quite like this. Last season, he was giving up north of 4 walks per 9 innings, and this season he's been able to work on that quite a bit as he's been quite fortunate on balls in play. I'm not going to lie to you. He has given up 6 hits in 21 innings while his strikeouts at 16 punchouts in 21 innings. You do expect the contact to be coming back and hurting him just a little bit, but all in all, I think that this has been a very impressive sort of turn for Ronald Blanco. Meanwhile, got a guy in Trevor Williams that he is very much a pitcher contact guy. Last year he was getting less than 6.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, was posting up an ERA that was in the neighborhood about 5.55 with a fielding dependent darn near 6 as he gave up 2 home runs per 9 innings. Thus far this season, he has given up about 3.5 walks per 9 innings. Has led the team to victory in 2 out of his 3 starts thus far, so that's been something positive, but overall, I do have just a little bit of a suck down sort of approach on Trevor Williams, as I do think that the Astros' top of the lineup is going to be able to get to him. You've got Kyle Tucker, Yordan Alvarez, Jose Altuve, 3 guys that entered in the series, all being able to supply 5 home runs, all give you at least a 370 on base. Alex Bregman has yet to hit a home run, but he's starting to come around in terms of the average, while Jeremy Pena hitting well above a 320 for this bunch as well. Really, other than Jose Abreu, who's been a big fat disappointment ever since joining the Houston Astros, this team has been pretty rock solid. And for the Washington Nationals, they did have a little bit of power in the offseason, bringing in Joey Gallo, Jesse Winker, along with Eddie Rosario. Only one of these guys there is panning out right now is Jesse Winker. Gallo has 3 home runs, but sitting a banded .136 with more home runs than singles. That's what you always expect out of our good friend Joey Gallo, but for Winker, about a .485 on base. He has been absolutely incredible, but CJ Abrams, he's able to seal some bags. He's giving you .355 on base, 5 home runs. He's been able to really step it up, but some of the guys that were so rock solid a season ago, the really entirety of the catcher spot for this team, Joey Meneses, Lane Thomas, these are guys hitting a 200 or lower. That's been rough for this team, though. Luis Garcia has found a way to be able to move the line for the Washington Nationals. It's not a great bullpen. It's not a terrible bullpen. They pick up Dylan Floro off the scrap heap. That should be able to help them out a little bit. Derek Law has been a bit up and down, but Jordan Weems is actually a very underrated reliever for this bunch. Kyle Finnegan is always a little bit of a roll of the dice, but all in all, I do think that they're going to be able to do a fine job against a Houston Astros team that the bullpen pitching, it is quite diminished. Like, they used to have guys like Hector Neris, Ryan Stanek, guys that could hold down the fort for an inning or two, and even though you've got Josh Hader along with Ryan Presley, you just don't have as much depth anymore. Brian Rayu is able to give you some good innings, but he's been a little bit up and down this season, though. Rafael Montero has actually been very, very good for the Houston Astros this far this season, but I do think that for Blanco, even though he's going to start to experience a little bit of regression, I still like him quite a bit more in this spot rather than Trevor Williams. I do think that Williams is going to have a tough time against the top of the fold for this Houston Astros team, which is why I did set my total at a 9.3. 9.3. You're at an 8.5 or a 9. I'm going to be willing to take a look at the over. And for the Astros, at a minus 105 or better, willing to lay a run and a half. 971, 972 on the betting board. The Philadelphia Phillies play host to the Chicago White Sox. Mike Soroka is on the bump for the White Sox. Zach Wheelan and Dylan Wheeler is on the bump for the Phillies. And the Phillies, mondo favorites here. You're going to be getting them anywhere between minus 275 to minus 290. Anywhere between plus 235 to seeing as high as a plus 248. Your number on the White Sox, 7.5, is your total. Over is minus 125. The under is plus 105. Seeing an 8 out there as well. With the 8, under is minus 110. And the over is minus 110. I needed at least a plus 268 to take a shot on the White Sox. If you're looking to lay a run and a half with the Philadelphia Phillies, you're going to be laying about a minus 130 to a minus 135. Wouldn't want to go past a minus 135, but I'm willing to lay it. The Chicago White Sox offense is a skid mark on the underpants of baseball. For the White Sox, 2 runs or fewer in each of their last 4 games, and they have broken 2 runs once in their last 7. Oy. This is just not good, to say the least. Like, you just take a look up and down the boulevard right now for the White Sox. Good news is Eloy Jimenez is back in the fold for them, and you've got Paul DeJong, who's been able to hit 262 with 3 home runs. Yip-de-doo there, but I ain't past this. You just have absolutely nothing going right for this team. I don't know what happened to Andrew Benintendi, but he has absolutely forgotten how to hit. I guess that's what happens when you put on a White Sox uniform, as you had 2 guys that saw an at-bat yesterday, and you saw 11 guys in total go up to the plate for the Chicago White Sox, if you include pinch hitters. 2 guys in total hitting above a 220 for this team. 3 guys in total hitting above a 200. Like, there's absolutely no power to speak of. Andrew Vaughn has regressed. You've got Nicky Lopez, Martin Maldonado at the bottom of the fold. They are absolute automatic outs. I mean, this is not great. Meanwhile, you've got a Philadelphia Phillies team that may have been a little bit up and down themselves, but Alec Boehm got himself going yesterday with a pair of home runs and 6 RBI. That's absolutely incredible. 364 on base. Bryce Harper is still in a little bit of a funk. 225 average. If you take out that 3 home run game that he had a few weeks ago, that said, he hasn't done anything, though. Trey Turner's moving the line. Not a ton of power thus far, but north of a 4 on base, hitting above a 3 iron. You'd like to see that. Amando Sosa has found a way to be able to move the line as well. And for the Philadelphia Phillies, their bullpen seems to be getting a little bit back on kilter as well. It's been a rough year for, say, Anthony Dominguez thus far. You've had a few question marks out there in the bullpen, but Gregory Soto, he was looking good up until we saw that Colorado Rockies fiasco a few days ago, but I do think that he's going to be able to pick it up like what I've seen out of Junior Marte. And for the White Sox, this has actually not been a terrible bullpen. There have been about league average as far this season. I do think that we're going to see some regression with some of these older guys like Steven Wilson, Dominic Leon, and company, but I mean, honestly, the pitching has not been absolutely awful. I mean, this is just a lineup, though, that they're just not putting back to ball. Meanwhile, you've got a guy in Zach Wheeler who has been a guy that throughout his career has always struggled a little bit in April. As far as this season, posting up about a 3 ERA, always pitches a little bit better when he's at home rather than away from home, has given up just 2 home runs in 24 innings, 30 strikeouts. His fielding independent is right around where his ERA is. He's actually been very, very good. And you've got a guy, Mike Soroka. He just has not been himself since the injuries. He has made 4 starts. He's given up 4 home runs. His walks per 9 rate is well above 5. He's actually got more walks than strikeouts, 12 walks to 10 strikeouts thus far, posting up nearly a 7 ERA. I think that he gets absolutely lit up by the Philadelphia Phillies, and I think that the Philadelphia Phillies are able to hit this total almost by themselves. I set my total at 8.3, not counting on much more than 2 runs from the White Sox, but I think the Phillies supply the boom. I'm willing to lay up to a minus 135 on that Phillies run line, and looking at the 7.5 over, set my total at 8.3. 973, 974 on the betting board. The Cincinnati Reds, yes, we're on to Cincinnati, and they're on to playing goes to the LA Angels, as Patrick Sandoval is on the bump for the Angels, and got Graham Ashcraft, who's on the bump for the Reds. And the Reds do find themselves as a favorite of minus 120 on the initial opener that I'm seeing. Plus 111 is that number on the Havos. 9.5 is the total on the 9.5. Over is minus 115. The under is minus 105. And I did set the Reds at a minus 139. I'm going to be willing to dive in on the money line for the Cincinnati Reds. It's been a little bit of a topsy-turvy season for them. And Ashcraft is very much a pitcher contact guy. Throughout his career, he's gotten less than 7 strikeouts per 9 innings. The walks can sometimes be a little bit of an issue for him, but it feels like he's done a better job of commanding ever since. Yeah, it is just really, really rough May/early June last season. For the campaign thus far this season, the swing and miss stuff has been up. It's a small sample size of 3 starts, but he in those 3 starts has been able to give you 19 strikeouts, which you do like to see. And the walks are down to about 2 walks per 9 innings, 4.15 ERA, 3.95 fielding independent. And for Patrick Sandoval, he's just a very awkward pitcher in general. His swing and miss stuff has been a little little bit better this year. He's gotten 18 punchouts in 17 and a third innings, but his whole game is trying to just mitigate our contact. He's always good at not giving up the deep ball. Year in and year out, he's going to give up about 0.5, 0.6 home runs per nine innings, but he's going to issue a lot of walks. Last season, gave out 4.6 walks per nine innings, 4.7 walks per nine innings thus far this season. And for Patrick Sandoval, he does find a way to just be able to get some of these like cheaper outs as well. I noticed that he's got a really good pickoff move, so he does a good job of being relatively crafty in general, but I do think that just all the contact that he does give up in general might be a little bit rough out here in Cincinnati, where it's pretty much a hitter's paradise. You've got Ellie De La Cruz, who's done a nice job moving the line this far this season. 6 home runs, he's hitting a .290, can sometimes be a little bit inconsistent, but when this guy is on, this guy is on. You do need some of these guys that are a little bit younger to be able to step it up as well. Christian Encarnacion Strand, he's not a younger guy, but Jameer Candelario, Jonathan India, Will Benson, these are all guys hitting at 200 or lower, but have been able to get great production out of Spencer Sear, north of a 400 base with 3 home runs. And for the Reds, it's not a great bullpen. It's not a terrible bullpen. They enter into this series right around about 20th in the league in terms of bullpen ERA. I like what you're able to get out of Lucas Sims, DJ Antone. Unfortunately, it appears is hurt once again, but Brent Suter has been able to do a nice job holding down the fort. Buck Farmer, nothing great, nothing terrible. And Fernando Cruz, 2 seasons ago, had a sub-2 ERA. He's been able to get back into that form this season. Meanwhile, for the LA Angels, bullpen hasn't been terrible. You've got Matt Moore, Carlos Estevez, who have been able to do a nice job, but I mean, they've got a lot of older guys that they could poop the bed at any time. Jose Cicerno, Hunter Strickland, Adam Simber. Like, these are guys that are long in the tooth, and you cannot be feeling too great about them. And for the Angels, they pretty much have 3 hitters at this point. Mike Trout along Taylor Ward has been amazing. Trout is right now only hitting about a .255, but 8 home runs at a .340 on base. Taylor Ward is hitting darn near a .300. He's been able to supply 6 home runs, and Logan Ohapi has moved the line. He's hitting about a .300, .385 on base. Not a ton of power, but I mean, him being able to get on base is big because you've got the likes of Brandon Drury, Zach Neto, Aaron Nix, Nate Chenal, Mickey Moniak, all hitting a .210 or lower. Meanwhile, you've been able to get some relatively solid production recently of Anthony Rendon as well. Started out the year a big giant offer for the most part, and ever since then, he's been he will pick it up just a little bit, but that said, I do think that the Cincinnati Reds are going to be able to do a nice job holding down the fort against an Angels team that, like I was mentioning, they're just a little bit top-heavy. I did set my total at 9.3. I think that Sandoval is able to keep the ball in the air, but I do think that he gives up plenty of contact. I do think that the Reds capitalize. I do like the Reds on the money line, and here at a 9.5, I like the under. 975, 976 on the betting board. The Walker Texas Rangers hit the road the facing off against the Atlanta Braves as Charlie Morton is on the bump for the Bravos, and Nathan Eovaldi is on the bump for Texas, and Texas is back to being an underdog of anywhere between plus 135 to plus 142. Meanwhile, between minus 150 to minus 162, then around Atlanta, 9.5 is the total. Under is between minus 110 to a minus 115. The over is between minus 105 to a minus 110. With the Bravos, I did set them as a favorite in this ordeal of a minus 138. So now that we're getting right around about a plus 139, plus 141 I'm seeing out there as well, I'm going to be willing to take a shot on the Texas Rangers on the money line. For Nathan Eovaldi, he does have a few home and road splits, but he just does a great job in terms of his command. Like each of the last 5 seasons, less than 2.3 walks per 9 innings since when he was dealing with that injury towards the back half of the season last year, and it's just gone out there and has done a solid job of pitching. He gave up 3 home runs in his last 2 starts against the A's and the Houston Astros, and that Astros start was a little bit unsightly, giving up 5 runs in 6 innings, but all in all, has done a nice job holding down the fort. Now, Atlanta is going to be able to get theirs. This is an offense as high-powered as any in the big leagues. 1 through 9, you do not have a guy that is like some sort of an automatic out or anything like that. You've got Ronald Acuna Jr. starting to find it once again. Has only provided 1 home run, but is doing an amazing job, giving you north of a .400 on base. And then you've got Orlando Arcia, Marcel Ozuna, Jared Kelnick when he's been out there. All these guys hitting at least a .325. And in the case of Ozuna, entered into the series with 8 home runs. Matt Olson has been able to provide 3 bombs after he led the league in this aspect last season. He, Ozzie Albies, have both been able to give you north of a .350 on base as well. And then on the flip side for the Texas Rangers, the offense has been a little bit more touch and go this season in that they're still doing a great job getting on base. Corey Seager, Adolis Garcia, Marcus Semien, all hitting north of a .290. All these guys have been able to do a solid job finding a way on base as well. And then you've got Wyatt Langford, who has yet to be able to crank out the deep ball, but he has been able to provide about a .330 on base. Josh Smith has been solid, but they dealt with a few injuries. You've had Ezekiel Duren along with Leody Severs be a little bit inconsistent towards the bottom of the fold. You tell that Josh Young being out of the fold, and we saw that from the team last season as well when Young was hurt. They do suffer a little bit from that. The Rangers, not a great bullpen, not a terrible bullpen. I like the fact that they brought in David Robertson, Kirby Yates in the offseason, but they have to deal with a few injuries on that front as well. Jacob Latz is someone I'm bullish on. Jose Leclerc, though, can be a little bit of a roll of the dice. When he's on, he's on. When he's off, he's off. And for the Atlanta Braves, this team is a slight slightly above average team in terms of bullpen ERA. I do think that once you get Tyler Madsick back and firing all cylinders after he missed all of last season, pretty much, that's going to be able to help out this bullpen. Rossy Iglesias, so a very nasty reliever. And then got the likes of Dylan Lee, Joe Jimenez, guys that are a little bit unsung heroes holding down the fort. I do, though, think that for Charlie Morton, you got to have your trepidations with the amount of just overall hard contact that he gives up. He either gets a strikeout or he gives up some sort of a rocket. It doesn't feel like there's too much in between with Charlie Morton, and it's not like he's ever been the world's greatest pitcher with regards to his command as well. He is getting up there in years. He's darn near 40 years old as well, and for Charlie Morton, I do think that the little bit of fortune that he's had on balls in play, that's going to be coming to an end sooner rather than later. Last year, he had a fielding independent that was much above his ERA. This year, he's actually been just a touch unluckier to begin the season, and in 17 innings pitch, he's got a 5.29 ERA, but a fielding independent more around a 4.20, getting about 9.5 strikeouts per 9 innings, but again, the walks are still there. Last year, about 4.5 walks per 9 innings. He's at 4.2 walks per 9 innings thus far this season, so I do think that the Rangers are going to be able to get something going on offense. I do think that with Nathan Eovaldi, he gives up his, but all in all, both of these teams have been a little bit touch and go with regards to deep ball. It's just home runs in general have been a little bit down this season, so I did set my total at a 9.2. Here at the 9.5, I'm going to be looking at the under, and with the Rangers being able to get plus 139 or higher, I'm looking at that money line. 977, 978 on the betting board. The Seattle Mariners are on the road facing off against Colorado Rockies. For the Seattle Mariners, it will be Luis Castillo. Meanwhile, for the Rockies, it is currently undecided. Was supposed to be Kyle Freeland at first. Right now, I'm seeing on MLB.com, the projected matchup is Luis Castillo going up against Dakota Hudson. And when it was supposed to be up against Kyle Freeland, I had this money line more around a minus 184. I was willing to go up to about a minus 128 with that Mariners run line. I'd be willing to go to more like a minus 192 money line with the Mariners, and would be willing to lay up to a minus 130 with that run line. And either Hudson or Kyle Freeland, where the total will be the same, 11 or less. I'd like the over 11 or higher. I'm going to be taking a look at the under. And when this was pulled off the board, we did not have any run line, so not able to give you a whole heck of a lot there. But that said, if I'm able to get a minus 130 or less, I'm going to be willing to roll with it. For Luis Castillo, has been a pretty miserable start to the season. Even towards back half of last year, he was struggling, but I do think that he's going to be able to pick it up. It's not as if Luis Castillo is not getting swings and misses. It's not like he has really been reverting to what he was when he was with the Cincinnati Reds. When he was with the Reds, he was always very good at being able to get strikeouts, but was just unable to locate. He would give up a lot of walks. Thus far this season, has only given up 1.7 walks per 9 innings. He's getting 11.2 punchouts per 9 innings, and he's been probably the most unlucky pitcher in the big leagues. 5.82 ERA, a 3.06 fielding independent. Going against our Rockies bunch that, well, they always hit much better at home rather than on the road. They, last season, were able to put up 5.35 runs per game at home, or like 3.65 runs per game when they were away from home, and for this Colorado Rockies unit, about 40 points better with their batting average at home rather than away from home. But with there being a snow out yesterday, the conditions aren't necessarily the world's greatest for hitting currently out there in Colorado. It's a little bit chilly. You've been able to have Ryan McMahon absolutely rip the cover off the ball. He's been able to supply the team with a pair of home runs, hitting at 360. That's been good. And Elias Diaz, he's finding a way to be a move line. Not necessarily a ton of power with him again, but about a 350 on base. Matter of fact, for the Rockies, just 16 home runs in their first 19 games of the season. But you got a lot of guys like Brendan Rodgers, Nolan Jones, that they need to pick it up a little bit. Chris Bryant has been dealing with an injury, and what he's been out there, he's been just downright awful. And this is a Rockies bullpen that once again is in the bottom five in the big leagues in terms of their bullpen ERA. Victor Vodnik has actually been relatively solid for the team. I'm waiting for him to regress, but he's actually been able to do a halfway decent job, and Jake Bird has been okay. But likes of Anthony Molina, Justin Lawrence, along with Tyler Kinley, providing north of a 6 ERA, has been less than savory. And for the Seattle Mariners, this is a top six team in the big leagues in terms of bullpen ERA, and this is with dealing with the injury to Matt Brash. Brett DeGeist is the latest guy that they picked up. They just find these veteran guys, and they're able to pretty much reacclimate them, sort of like a West Coast version of the Rays. Taylor Cicado, Trent Thornton, Gabe Spire, these have all been very rock solid pieces for the team. Ryan Stanek, he comes over from the Astros, he's been good. Andres Munoz, he's able to do a nice job of closing the door. And then for the Seattle Mariners, it's just all about getting the bats to be able to come online, because the team is sitting as a collective a 213. If you look at the Baseball Savant numbers, it should be probably about 20 points higher. Mitch Haniger has really been that lone guy that has been consistent for this team, as he's got 13 RBI, 370 on base. That Ty France be able to move the line as well, hitting about a 278. But when it comes to Jorge Polanco, J.P. Crawford, Cal Raleigh, Mitch Garver, Dylan Moore, all these guys hitting a 210 or lower, that's been an issue. And Julio Rodriguez currently has as many home runs as myself at a 270 on base. I do think that the Mariners are going to be able to pick it up, especially if it is up against Dakota Hudson. Very much a pitch-of-contact guy, and putting a pitch-of-contact guy out there in Coors, that's not necessarily too tremendous for Hudson. He gives up a lot of walks while being a pitch-of-contact guy as well. So that makes it all the worse. That knocks himself out of starts early. That leads to a lot of bullpen pitching. Like, you take a look at him with with the St. Louis Cardinals last season. He had 5 strikeouts at 3.8 walks per 9 innings. All that he's trying to do is not give up home runs, and I feel like this could be disastrous. So 11 or less, I'd like the over 11.5 or the under. And if you do get this pitching matchup with it being Hudson versus Castillo, I'd be willing to lay up to a minus 130 with that Mariners run line. We need Northo plus 190 to take a shot on the Rockies money line. And wrap things up with 9:29, 9:30 on the betting board. The Toronto Blue Jays, they're facing off against the old slam Diego Padres. It's Jose Barrios who's on the bump for the Jays. Fangraphs is telling us that Johnny Burrito is going to be getting the start for the Padres, which that pretty much signals to me bullpen game. So this is one that is off the board, and pretty much with a pseudo bullpen game for the Padres, I did make the Blue Jays minus 134 on the money line, and I'd be willing to take the run line if I'm able to get a plus 133 or better. And then 8.6 is what I set the total at. 8.5 or less, looking at the over 9 or higher, the under. Jose Barrios has actually been very good in 4 starts as far this season. 3 runs allowed in 25 and 2/3 innings. The strikeout numbers aren't necessarily like massive or anything like that. He's getting about 7.5 to 8 punchouts per 9 innings. But over the last 12 months, Jose Barrios, who has always really struggled on the road, he's been much better on the road. He still has a little bit of a split, but it's nothing unreasonable. And I do think that he's going to be able to go out there and do his job, though I do have a little bit of trepidation when it comes to Blue Jays bullpen. The good news for them, Eric Swanson along Jordan Romano, these are guys that are back in fold. The bad news is you've had a few guys like Trevor Richards, Yimi Garcia, that have been inconsistent, really dating back the last 12 months in general. It is a Blue Jays bullpen that overall for the season, you're finding them clocking in terms of their ERA right in the neighborhood of about 27, so that has been far less than terrific. And for the San Diego Padres, they're about 19. So if you do have to throw out their Burrito for a start, honestly, he's a little bit more comfortable as a starter rather than a reliever, but he just has not been good ever since getting called on up to the big league level. For his career, he's been posting up an ERA that is just a tick below 4. Not getting a lot of swings and misses. Gives up about 3 walks per 9 innings. Has been a little bit better since a brutal start to the season, but you're going to be relying upon a lot of these guys to hold down the fort. They've got Logan Gillespie who comes in from the Baltimore Orioles. He's able to lend a little bit of length. Adrian Morejone, he's someone that began his career as a starter as well. I wouldn't be surprised if you have like Morejone along with Johnny Burrito piggyback off of one another. So if you get Morejone as a starter, really wouldn't affect my handicap too much here. And then you've got the likes of Robert Suarez, Aniel De Los Santos, Wandy Peralta. These are more of your trustworthy guys. And for the Padres, you've got 2 guys in the middle of the lineup that are still able to thump in Fernando Tatis Jr. along with Manny Machado. Tatis Jr. and Machado both 3+ home runs, with Machado finding a way to be able to hit about a 260 or so. Tatis about a 375 on base entering into the series, but you just need a little bit more out of the likes of Xander Bogaerts, Ha-Sung Kim. Both of these guys entered into the series hitting a 230 or lower. And for Bogaerts, he's been a pretty big waste of money thus far. Luis Campusano at the catcher spot, though, he's been able to find a way on. And for the Blue Jays, it has been an all mighty struggle for this lineup. They had 3 guys in the starting lineup yesterday hitting above a 225 entering, and one of those guys is Justin Turner down for what, who went deep yesterday, providing north of a 4 on base. He has been tremendous. The slander that we give to the Blue Jays, he deserves none of that. Davis Schneider has been okay at being able to find a way on base as well, and Kevon Biggio has been able to turn it around as well, but Flagler Jr., Bo Bichette, Alejandro Kerr, Kevin Kiermaier, these are guys hitting a 225 or lower. George Springer has been in and out of the fold, and he's been inconsistent as well, so it's a very interesting spot, because I do think that the Blue Jays are going to start to erupt a little bit more at the plate, and I do think that Barrios gives a relatively good start as well, but I also like the Padres and what they've been able to do here with regards to the lineup as well. So, in after less, I like the over 9 or higher to the under end, with the Blue Jays willing to lay up to a minus 133 on that money line, plus 135 or higher, looking at the Padres, and that'll wrap things up for the Saturday edition of the Baseball Betting Show, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. Big thanks to Rob Donaldson of youtube.com/Rob Donaldson for joining me in the last segment. If you do like hearing from this fine podcast, Baseball Betting Show, you're able to subscribe wherever you get podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of 2 ways to be able to fire those in. First one is my Twitter /XTimeline, @GNN_41. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please just send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you are able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Coming at you guys every single day throughout the baseball season. That means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thanks so much for tuning in.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.